Good afternoon once again, and welcome once again. So, today's talk will be on self-esteem, self-respect, some people call it self-worth, sometimes people say. So whether we call it self-worth, self-respect, self-esteem, more or less the same thing, slightly different connotations. When we say self-esteem, it is holding the self in regard, having positive feelings towards the self. When we say self-worth, we mean I believe I am a person of worth. I have some value. So if I have value, then I give respect to myself. Yeah? And so therefore self-respect. So different people speak about it in different ways. So today we will speak about self-esteem. Self-esteem has been perhaps one of the most widely researched areas in psychology, if not the most widely researched area, certainly one of the most widely researched areas. You just search in any database of psychological research, you will come up with thousands and thousands of research articles on self-esteem. So it has been something that has been of central importance to the field of psychology. It is obviously the central aspect of any spiritual practice, because spiritual practice is about, again, regaining our sense of self-worth, our value as a human being, as an individual. So it has been very widely researched, and many psychologists say it's a fundamental human need. We can't do without self-esteem. So everybody tries to experience self-esteem in their life. Everybody tries to experience themselves as worthy of respect. So that's, of course, self-esteem. Now, so since it is a very central experience, or at least a central yearning of the human being to experience the self as worthy of respect, self-esteem, then obviously anyone involved in the helping professions like psychology, etc., would be interested in finding out, so how is self-esteem constructed? How do people experience themselves as individuals with value, worthy of respect? How do individuals experience themselves like that? That becomes a subject of investigation. So how do we experience ourselves as beings worthy of respect? What do we base our respect on? What do we base our value, our worth on? Yes? What are your experiences? What do we base our value, our worth on? How do we experience self-esteem? Yes?
Something we find ethical.
Something that we find ethical?
Yeah.
So when I am able to do something that is morally correct, that is ethical, I can experience myself as a person of worth, of value. Yes? So this is certainly one aspect of experiencing self-esteem. The experience of virtue and morality. So unless and until I am engaged in activities, in engagements, where I have the possibility of experiencing my virtue, a sense of morality, a sense of doing what is right, I can experience myself to be worthy, yes. How else do we experience self-esteem? Yes.
Overcoming fear.
Overcoming fear. Mm-hmm.
As fearing and then doing it anyway.
Okay. So another way could be, you've spoken about overcoming fear, but it could also be overcoming anything. For some people it could be fear, for some people it could be something else. A sense of accomplishment that I get when I'm able to achieve something. Mm-hmm. It could be. So sense of accomplishment and achievement also. So, for example, someone may say, okay, if I'm able to overcome fear, or if I'm able to make myself do something even though I'm feeling the fear. So, you know, I work on it and I get a sense of accomplishment out of that. For other people, it could be experienced in different ways. So some people will say, if I'm able to accomplish or achieve, finish a certain education, then I feel I have some value. I have set some goals in my life, or it could even be simple things that I have set in the day. Today I want to finish this, and I finish it, I feel good, and I feel yes, yes.
Isn't it a self-confidence?
Self-confidence would also, yes, it's a different concept,
yes,
of course, but it is related. And the research has shown that self-confidence would be one of the manifestations of having self-esteem, or experiencing self-esteem. So if I'm able to accomplish something, I feel confident, I can also give that respect and value to myself. Confidence is more about, I believe I can do it, or I believe I can accomplish it. And esteem is more about giving respect to the self, a sense of worth and value for the self. So slightly different, but of course related. How else do we experience self-esteem? Yes?
Integrity.
Yeah, okay. Virtue, morality, integrity, somewhere in that area. Yes? I can experience myself as a person of integrity.
Acknowledgement and approval by others.
Acknowledgement and approval by others. So, of course, we have aspects of relationships with others through which I can get a sense of approval, acknowledgement, etc. And yes, I can experience self-esteem that way. And there will be many other things. Psychological research has, of course, identified this. There are some aspects of self-esteem that we experience, but we may not be willing to admit it openly because that sounds not so good. So, say for example, many of us experience self-esteem through the body and the body image. Am I beautiful? Am I handsome? Am I good-looking? Am I strong and muscular? Am I athletic? Yeah. How's my hair? Is it falling away? Is it black or has it become grey? Am I blonde? Am I brunette? What am I? So, of course, when we ask people this, really, my self-esteem is not based on this, but really, we ask ourselves honestly. There is some aspect also involved, for most of us at least, yes. The way we appear, our body image. So our sense of self is on how strong I am, how thin or how fat or whatever, and associated things with that. And when we are able to experience this in a good way, we feel good about ourselves. Self-esteem could also, of course, be connected to our possessions, even physical possessions. Yes? One of my friends has a Mercedes, you see. So we were asking, okay, so what gives you a sense of power? Generally asking people, what gives you a sense of power? And so he was very honest. He said, when I drive my Mercedes on the road, I feel a sense of power. I feel I'm worthy, yeah? So when we have these possessions and various symbols that in the world are associated with worth and value, it could be money, it could be status that I'm occupying in an organization or wherever, I get a sense of value and worth through that as well. So we can have many, many aspects of self-esteem. So we experience it in different ways. It could be through our achievements and various things. What is the problem with that? Any problem with that? Any problem with that? Yes?
You can lose it all.
You can lose it all. What about our virtue and morality? Can we okay, we can lose our possessions and symbols. We can certainly lose our body at some point. We will. I mean, forget about can. We will. You know George Bernard Shaw, the English playwright? If you go sometime, I've never been to England. But if you ever go to England, and if you go to his grave, a very interesting thing written on his tombstone. I don't exactly remember the words, but it's something like this. I always knew that if I hung around long enough, this would eventually happen. So, this will eventually happen, for sure. Relationships, again, you know, they may go away for various reasons. And of course, with that, the approval also goes away. My accomplishments and achievements, they may be valid today, they may not be valid tomorrow. What about virtue and morality? Can we lose that? Also, if I'm not virtuous anymore, then I lose it.
Yes.
Okay. So if I perform actions which are not virtuous.
No, you can change your mind.
Ah, yes, very true. That is true. Yeah, because many a times, sense of morality, sense of virtue is also dependent on the cultural, social context.
In your
which
experience, maybe you become disappointed about your marriage.
Yes, you're right. That also happens. So that can also sometimes change at a certain level. So anyway, so we base our self-esteem on some of these things and many, many other things. For example, self-esteem can also be based on the social groups I belong to. Self-esteem can also be based on my cultural identity, ethnic identity, language, nation, religion, so many aspects of it. So, yes? Yeah, my work, activities, that's one thing that we should probably write down. Work, and also associated with that, my competencies and skills. Mm-hmm. See, when I get the opportunity to demonstrate my competencies and skills, I feel that sense of respect or esteem for the self. So now, various ways in which we experience self-esteem. And of course, so many of us invest our sense of self in some of these areas, if not all of these areas. And for most people, maybe some areas are much more important than other areas. So for some people, the body and the body image may be the most important. For some people, relationships and approval may be the most important. For some people, the culture may be the most important. And they're willing to sacrifice anything for that. And that is also very closely connected to a sense of virtue and morality. So, and usually we have invested our self-worth in different areas. Now research shows that we do invest our self-worth in various areas, this and maybe many others, when we are able to achieve the goals that we have in our mind in those particular areas, be it getting approval from someone, be it accomplishing certain goals, be it demonstrating certain competencies, be it behaving in a virtuous or moral manner. When we are able to accomplish that, we feel good. And because we feel good, it is motivating. So we want to do it again and again because that makes me feel good about myself. It is motivating. So it is good, yes?
I don't understand why meditation isn't one of the things that gives you self-esteem.
I don't know, you tell me. If you want, I'll put it there.
Please do so.
Why does meditation help you in experiencing self-esteem?
It gives me peace.
It gives us a certain experience inside. Yeah. Yes? We will come to that a little later. Yeah, we will come to that a little later. But generally speaking, research demonstrates this. We're looking at psychology first, then we'll go to spirituality. Okay. So it's all, it is motivating. But now, there has been a lot of cutting-edge research in this area from the 1990s, but mostly in the 2000, 2001, 2004, and on to 2010. So the past two decades, there has been a fascinating amount of research. Not just a fascinating amount of research, but a fascinating quality of research. Using very sophisticated, cutting-edge statistical techniques and trying to understand human behavior and trying to control for various factors, they have discovered something very interesting. And what they have discovered is, when we have this kind of conditional self-esteem based on certain things, it has many costs. And research is now demonstrating that the costs associated with pursuing self-esteem in this way are much, much more than the benefits. So what are the benefits? When I'm able to experience that self-esteem through these various areas in which I have invested my sense of self, I feel good. So it is motivating. But the other side of the story is, when I'm unable to achieve these goals, when I'm unable to get this approval in the relationship, when I'm unable to have those accomplishments, when I'm kicked out of the social groups to which I believe I belong, or where people sort of disown me or separate from me, when my body is not functioning very well, or I start getting pimples for teenagers, or start losing my hair, I'm unable to demonstrate my competencies because I have no job, or I've lost my job, or whatever it is, when I am unable to experience that self-esteem through these various areas, the costs that I experience are far greater than the benefits if I would have experienced these goals. And that is becoming a very clear and strong and consistent finding in psychological research these days. So what are these costs? One is the costs to my emotional well-being and costs to motivation. So, investing self-esteem in any of these or any other areas is motivating. Because I achieve and I feel good about myself. But the other problem is when I fail, then it is not just that I have failed in that task. That failure is generalized to my entire self. So say, for example, my self-esteem is based on getting approval in relationships. And I do not get the approval in a relationship. Any relationship. So it's not just that I have not got approval. I am not good enough. I am useless. I don't deserve love. Maybe I, you know, all these things. Competencies, I want to accomplish something. And I'm unable, I've set myself some targets. I want to achieve a certain, I'm a student, say for example. So I want to achieve a certain grade point average. And I get significantly lower. So it's not just that I have failed in that task and that activity. I am a failure. It generalizes to my whole sense of self. Though it is just one area, it generalizes to my whole sense of self. And that way, when I am unable to achieve these goals, the failures can be much more demotivating than the successes can be motivating. And that has immediate implications on my emotional well-being, and I experience many more negative states, etc., etc. This has been a very clear and consistent finding. Secondly, because of this, my sense of autonomy or independence and my ability to regulate or control myself goes down. Autonomy is independence. So obviously when I'm totally dependent on all these things, I have a sense of I have to do this rather than I want to do this. You understand? There is a pressure inside. Is it clear? This, you know? So I'm going and working, but and I want to accomplish certain things at work, but it's more than wanting, it's I have to. Because when I do, I feel good about myself. And so because of that, there is a dependence. With that, I lose my sense of autonomy. I'm doing things because I have to do them. I'm not doing things because I really want to do them. So it could be even simple things like a mother taking care of her child. You see? In taking care of the child, the mother is experiencing some good emotions. You know, it makes you feel good when you can take care of a child. You feel virtuous. You feel that kindness. You feel that love. So you want to do it. But because you're experiencing this, after some time, it's a sense of obligation. I have to do this. And the moment it gets into this have to, then my sense of control shifts to the world outside. And I lose my sense of autonomy. And because of that, I also, my ability to control and regulate my feelings and emotions goes down. And there is research evidence that shows that when we are not able to accomplish these goals we have set for ourselves in whichever area, we give in to temporary, immediate satisfaction by indulging ourselves in something which is not useful for us. You know, it could be casual, mindless sex. It could be eating too much of something. You know, when there is frustration inside. How many of us eat chocolates when we are not feeling so well? Quite a few, right? Cookies, sweet things. So, okay, that is not that harmful. Okay, it's harmful, but not that harmful, yes?
I have a question about costs and benefits.
Yeah.
Because the results of this research are based on that the benefits might not be there. So the argument is based on that, okay, if you don't get the benefits, then the costs are much higher. So
no, no, benefits are there.
But let's say if once in a while, even rare, you get the benefit, and now how do you measure and compare benefit to the cost? Because it might be for me 10 years of trying to produce
something they do that.
Might be still worthy if I get it in the end and I will be satisfied.
They have done that. There are various. They have done that.
How do you measure? It might be very individual, actually.
Yeah, but they do it. There are very advanced ways of doing it. They do it. The same individual you would see when you are accomplishing these goals. So in a laboratory situation, you would create a situation. And when you are accomplishing these goals, then they see the experience that you have. And when you are frustrated from accomplishing that, the frustration that you have, the negative experiences you have. And then you compare on a scale on intensity levels. And it's very, very clear. They do it. They have compared. There is a lot of work on this. So anyway, autonomy and self-regulation, it also has major costs for relationships. Because when my goal is to prove myself in various areas, especially say work, accomplishment, when my goal is to prove myself, relationships many a times get manipulative. I'm using others as tools to accomplish my goal. I can even use various relationships as a tool to get approval from them in very, very subtle ways. Say, for example, I have recognized that people will love me if I am kind to them. Then I am being kind to them, not because I want to be kind to them, but I am being kind to them because if I am kind to them, they will like me. So in a very subtle, manipulative way, I can start using and abusing even relationships without knowing it. So superficially, I am saying, yeah, I am just being kind, I am just being nice. And the other person also says, yeah, yeah, very nice person, very sweet person, very charming, always smiling. But behind that charm and the smile is the desire to draw attention, to draw approval. So in very subtle ways. And when that is my focus, I will be kind and charming when it suits me. But relationships are not about what suits me. Relationships require sacrifice, relationships require commitment, relationships require adjustment. So, when it comes to adjusting, when it comes to other people entering my space, then, you know, the real me comes out. And all the charm, all the smile, all the kindness disappears. Because it's not convenient for me anymore. And so, obviously, when I start behaving like that, I will obviously not have healthy, long-term relationships with people because then I'm just abusing them. Other ways, another way of how this can affect relationships is when I am based, when I have based my competencies, my self-esteem on, say, certain competencies, certain qualities I have, then another person with similar qualities will be seen as a threat rather than as a resource. They're working in an organization, and I'm very well known in the organization, say, for certain qualities, analytical skills. Somebody else comes in with equally good or even better analytical skills. My position is being compromised, right? If that is where I have based my self-respect. And so that person will be seen as a threat. And instead of using that person as a resource, I may end up, you know, playing politics and games to get that person out or whatever, to protect my position. And eventually that doesn't really work. Other costs are with learning and performance. To learn, we have to fail, yes, now and then. The famous example, right, of Einstein and Edison, they tried 1,000 times, and then someone asked Edison, what did you learn from making this light bulb? And he said, I learned how to go wrong 1,000 times, you know. So we learn through mistakes, but then if my self-respect, my self-esteem is based on the outcome of something, I am not focused on the process, I am focused on the outcome. So instead of using the outcome as a means for learning, my focus is on using learning as a means to get the outcome. So I am really not learning. And when there is a failure, I will see that as a threat. Again, it generalizes to my whole sense of self. I am a failure. And because of that, I am unable to learn from those mistakes. I am unable to use those failures to fuel further work on myself or on whatever I am working with. So there is, in fact, in this area, there is very, very clear evidence of how when I base my self-respect on something, eventually it compromises my learning and performance. For example, for school students, there is very, very clear evidence. Students who base their self-respect, their self-esteem on getting good grades, so if I get good grades, I'm a good student, they report studying much more, they are certainly motivated to study much more, but they don't always get good grades because of the pressure, huh? So when you're studying, instead of learning, you're focused on the outcome. I want to, so, and the whole process is compromised, and eventually you don't end up getting the grades that you could have otherwise got. So that's one thing. And of course, there are also costs to our mental and physical health. So obviously, because when I see myself as a failure, that sense of failure is generalized to my whole sense of self, there are negative emotions experienced. And these negative emotions, I'm not good enough, I'm useless, I'm good for nothing, I will never learn, I'm always a failure, I always mess things up. All these talks that I have in my mind towards myself, that those are symptoms of depression. Sense of generalized sense of worthlessness. Secondly, there is anxiety because I am basing my self-respect on accomplishment of certain things. There is always the anxiety of not being able to do it because these things are not in my control. So there is always the anxiety of losing a relationship through which I am getting approval. Therefore, I want to hold on to the relationship. So many other things, and therefore anxiety, worry. And because of that, stress. Stress has connection to various physical illnesses. And there is very clear connection of one is with anxiety, we know, has a relationship to psychosomatic diseases. But also, people who base their self-esteem specially on accomplishments and possessions and achieving things and proving their competencies, they tend to be more hostile. You know, hostility? Mm-hmm. They tend to be hostile, negative towards others, and because they're always anticipating threat to their position, to their performance. And hostility has a very clear connection to cardiovascular problems and also the functioning of the immune system. So, the costs are quite a lot. So what to do? What to do now? Abandon the pursuit of self-esteem? Can we do that? Let go of any effort to try and feel good about myself. Just let go of it. Is it possible? We can't live like that, right? So some people say, well, this is the problem with conditional self-esteem. Can we experience some kind of unconditional self-esteem? Self-esteem that is not based on any conditions. Can we experience it? Non-contingent self-esteem. So, it doesn't matter. None of this matters. I can still feel I'm a person of value and worth and respect. Is it possible? Yes.
To find something within instead of without.
Okay, so this is where probably we are coming to that area. So the question, of course, is how do I experience unconditional self-esteem? Now, we will go into the aspect of can it ever be unconditional in the first place? So, for example, when we are speaking about finding something within, that is also a condition. So what kind of conditions do we need to fulfill in order to experience sustained self-esteem? Unconditional regard, unconditional respect is a very big thing in psychology, especially when it comes to therapy. Because a therapist needs to have that. Yes? People come to a therapist with all sorts of problems. And if the therapist is going to sit there and judge that person, oh, a very bad boy, very bad girl, obviously nothing is going to be accomplished. So when people speak about unconditional respect, unconditional regard for others, it's very important because others need to feel safe in your company to be able to even accept their mistakes. So then they can grow. So when it comes towards others, we need to practice this unconditional act, regard and respect and all as far as possible. So that is all fine. But when it comes to the self, can I have unconditional regard for myself? Is it possible? I have committed all sorts of things. Yeah, all sorts of things in the world outside. And then I say, no, that's all okay, you know. Let me experience unconditional regard. I've broken the hearts of, say, 1,000 people. Because the second one was more convenient than the first, and the third was more convenient than the second, and the fourth was more convenient than the third. I've gone on for about 1,000, maybe 2,000. Sometimes I hear 300. So I've done all that. I've cheated in various ways. I've cheated on my taxes a little bit. I've cheated in my relationships a little bit. Cheated in my studies a little bit. Unconditional self-esteem. Is it possible to experience it? Yes. How do we do it? Because in my mind, I can push away these feelings. In my mind, how do I reconcile myself to the fact of having done all these things? How do I feel respect for myself?
I would say it's harder from that perspective. But from the opposite perspective of the person who is having these things done to them.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if you are born a slave.
Yeah.
And I believe that that would be a better garden for unconditional self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have no expectation of having any of these conditions met because of your mm-hmm. situational condition that you were.
I understand that. So you say, for example, if someone is born in very poor or very unprivileged conditions,
yes,
most of these things are not available anyway. Yeah?
And are taught from a very early age that they cannot have their self-esteem based upon
it. Because they don't have it.
Because they don't have it.
They don't have it.
Exactly.
That is a different story. But when I have committed some things very clearly, which
then
I
would say that's no.
That's a different situation. Yes?
Could it be this more or less understanding that we deserve that self-esteem because we are living creatures, because we're human beings?
Yeah.
As human beings, we will do good things and bad things, and all that is part of being a human being.
Yeah. Good. This intellectual understanding is good. And we need it. And you're right. We need it. How do we translate this intellectual understanding to the level of feeling it?
That's a good question.
Because that is the critical thing, right? We know many things intellectually. And so now we moved a little bit towards spirituality. So when we're speaking about the I in spirituality, when we're speaking about the I in social sciences, this is I. There is nothing beyond this. I is my personality, my abilities, my strengths. All this is my I. Spirituality, we say, no, I is a deeper reality, the soul, the spirit. And when we speak about the soul and the spirit, we are speaking about the existence of some internal conditions. And when we speak about these internal conditions, we are speaking fundamentally about two things, at least in the philosophy of Raj Yoga, which we practice. One is that the inner spirit is made up of certain core values, and the inner spirit has an eternal nature. So, these are two of the fundamental conditions of the inner self. The understanding will start with this framework, and then we will look at the practical application of the framework. So the framework, of course, is that the soul has an eternal nature. It is never created, it is never destroyed, it continues to exist, it carries the experiences with it. The second is the soul, and it doesn't matter which culture people come from, it has certain core values, human values, love, peace, happiness, etc. You all know that. And when I have pushed away these values, I have repressed them, I have done things not in alignment with the experience of this original condition of the self, when this has been repressed, pushed away, then A, I create emptiness. It is like I am pushing a part of me away because it is difficult to be like that. As an example, someone challenges me, someone insults me, someone accuses me very unfairly of something which I have not done or which is not accurate. Yeah? I feel a sense of unfairness. Yes, it is quite valid. I may also feel a sense of anger. People would say it's valid because you have not done anything wrong and someone is accusing you, so you would feel a sense of anger. Yeah? And when I allow myself to feel that anger, one is I can even commit some acts out of that anger, give it back to that person, give the person a piece of my mind, tell the person, you know, show acts of anger. But even if my attitude towards that person has changed and I don't have a positive attitude towards that person anymore, I have moved away from my inner nature. I have repressed my potential to forgive, to use my love, to transcend that little bit of unfairness, whatever it may be. I have moved away. And if I have moved away, I have repressed my nature. If I have repressed my nature, I create emptiness, I lose respect for myself. Then I will search for respect in the world outside. And the more I do it, the more I will search for it outside. So yes, in the previous session, for those of you who were there, we spoke of transgression, if you remember. Transgression is where I have crossed certain boundaries, not crossing other people's boundaries, but certain limits, certain bounds of my own inner self. I have crossed that. I have committed a transgression. It's a grievous wrong committed because I have crossed those certain bounds of inner morality. We're not speaking about any external morality here, but that inner nature of the soul, of the self. I've committed a wrong. And when I push myself away from my own nature, I am committing a transgression against myself. I commit that transgression, I create guilt. This guilt will feed the emptiness more and more. And the more I feel empty, I will give in to indulgence, to fill in that space. So, how do we indulge ourselves? One, of course, indulgence could be very physical. Indulge yourself in eating and drinking and sex and just, you know, try to get rid of our frustration. Fill in the emptiness through that. A more sophisticated kind of indulgence would be getting approval from others through some subtle manipulative behaviors which don't even appear manipulative. It could be trying to prove my competencies, my qualities. It could be even through the practice of virtue and morality. That is also a way that we feed on the world, because if I am unable to experience this by repression, it gets projected into the world outside. And so, because I cannot experience my love, my power here, I try and experience it through various things here. And the more I try to do this, indulging myself, the more I distance myself from the ability of experiencing these things within. And the more respect I lose for myself. And the more I try to fill it up. And the more I become empty, the more I try to fill it up, the more I become empty. And so over a long period of time, and we're not speaking here of just this one physical existence that we understand. We understand the soul is eternal. So there are many existences, many lifetimes. And if we have done this over such a long time, obviously we come to a state where there is a deep gnawing emptiness inside. And I'm trying to fill it up constantly through some way or the other, even through virtuous action. How does it work out? The experience of the soul is love. Love is the original nature of the soul. Love brings kindness. Love brings forgiveness. Love brings gentleness. I'm unable to experience it. But I want to experience it because every soul wants to experience it because that is the original nature of the soul. How do I experience it? One is through other people. The other is through trying to be loving superficially. You know, I try to experience my dignity with a lot of grace and poise, and I will nod in the right way, I will smile in the right way, I will say, yes, of course. I'll be very kind, I'll be very gracious, very generous, but it will not be from the heart, and therefore it will be a very superficial exercise. And I have seen cases like this. It's called obsessive compulsive behavior. So one obsessive compulsive pattern is, you know, gross things like cleaning your hands again and again and again because you think it's dirty. Even if the hand is getting skinned and the flesh is coming off, you still do it. Extreme. Other kind of obsessive compulsive behaviors would be in the night, get up and keep checking whether everything is locked 10 times, 20 times because of the insecurity within. But there could be other more subtle ways of experiencing this obsessive compulsive behavior. I have to be right. I have to be moral. I have to be virtuous. I have to be good. I have to be kind. I have to be generous. So even behind that virtue, the energy is wrong. It is not coming from the heart. And so there will be this stiffness. Stiffness, tightness, and also tiredness. Because I will never be able to fill up the emptiness through these virtuous behaviors. So after some time, it's just too tiring, then I'll give up. Then I'll burst out in anger one day, or you know, I'll burst out in something one day. So it doesn't really work. So it could be various ways, and therefore then the answer would be, if I am to experience that kind of self-esteem which is sustainable, these inner conditions have to be experienced. Otherwise they are projected. And secondly, there is another mechanism which is called introjection. So because I have lost my self-respect, then I look for it in the world outside, and the world tells me, if you want to be respected, you have to be like this. You have to be blonde, 6'3", muscular, and then you will have respect. You have to be pretty. You have to look young. Even if you are 75 years old, you have to look young. You have to look gorgeous. So you will have young people watching a television program, and on television program, there's a journalist interviewing a 70-year-old woman who looks 40. So he asks her, I saw a program the other day, that's what I'm telling you. So he asks her, oh, Sue, how old are you? I'm 70. I don't believe this. You don't look 70. You look so young. You look so gorgeous. And all these young girls watching this program, my God, I have to look young. I have to look gorgeous. And all these other 70-year-olds who look 85. What happens to them, poor people? If their self-respect is based on the physical appearance, what happens to them? If it is not based, it doesn't matter. But this is the feedback we get from the world. If I am full inside, I will not care for that feedback. But when there is the emptiness, I will take that in. And so I take in these values that I am experiencing in the world within me, and then they become my conditions of worth, and then I keep trying to prove them again and again and again, and that will never fill up the emptiness because that will never make me full. So one is about good looks. Other things, there are always programs on success. Winning so much of money, you know, having a great job and having this power and position and this and that, and I'm taking it all in because I believe, okay, so to be, I have to be like that. Some things from my childhood I am taught, especially aspects of culture and religion and nation. These are very deep things. So from childhood I am taught, well, you know, to be a person of worth, you have to prove that you are a Muslim or a Christian or you know, your national identity, you're a Dane and you're Indian and you're whatever. That becomes an anchor of myself. But then I keep trying to prove it, keep trying to prove it, keep trying to fit into that society, which is the reflection of my identity. Never works that way. So, the answer then that spirituality has for us is, how do I move then from this emptiness to some semblance of fullness within? And there, of course, we come to your experience of understanding spiritual knowledge. But then again, when we were speaking about it, one is the intellectual understanding. And the other is bringing it down to the level of feeling and experience. So yes, intellectually, there is an understanding. So when we speak about yoga, we say, okay, there is an awareness. There is an understanding. That would be the first step, that there is something deeper within me. And these are the conditions I need to fulfill to experience that self-worth. But then that also has to, that awareness has to awaken and lead to an experience of actually feeling it, which leads to, of course, the realization of fullness. How do we bring about this experience of feeling it? First, the awareness. First, the awareness that there are fundamental qualities within. And many a times, they can be completely unconscious. For example, theory says what? What are the original qualities of the soul? The first and the most important quality is purity, cleanliness, purity of the spirit, purity in our intentions, purity in our actions, purity. It's the foundation of everything else. Without purity, there is no peace. Without purity, there is no love. Without purity, there is no power. Without purity, there is no happiness. That becomes the foundation. But do I really understand what purity is? And how do I experience purity? And with that, then we develop on many things. But many a times, I'll give you an experience. Many a times, we don't know. There are some things happening inside us, but we don't know. I have shared this with some of you before, I think, but there is this example. A friend of mine, not a very close friend, but a good friend. And he had an example, a very beautiful example of this process of how some values can be completely unconscious. We may not be aware of them at all, and therefore we don't even know we are doing anything wrong. We keep living our life for many, many years like that, and then one day, all that accumulated guilt comes out. So, this friend of mine, very modern, very successful, all these things, good looking, relationships, many relationships, a complicated thing. So, many accomplishments and achievements at a very young age, working for a multinational corporation, making lots of money, very good competencies, lots of possessions and symbols of power and success and all that. And a very charming fellow, superficially at least. very charming and well-mannered and very impressive. So he went and during one of his business tours to Paris. Now in Paris, Paris is a pretty well-preserved city because it's never been destroyed by any war or fire or anything. It's well-preserved. And there are some very nice, beautiful ancient churches. So he goes to this one church. He told me it was behind this Pantheon in Paris. Very nice church. So he goes in there. He's walking around the church. And he comes across a painting of Jesus Christ. Many paintings are there in the church. So he's walking around as a tourist. Not very religious. Not even from a Christian background. He's been born and brought up in a very liberal, modern, Western, whatever it is you want to call it, kind of an atmosphere, you know. At a very young age, having drinks with the parents, and, you know, very, very modern. Yeah, like that. So, very liberal, but never really practiced any religion as such. Okay, once in a while he would do it, but anyway. So he goes to this church out of touristic interest, and then he goes around, he sees this beautiful painting. And the painting, I've also seen it after that because I wanted to see what was there in the painting. The painting is, Jesus is sitting there. He's surrounded by a few very beautiful women. Okay, very, very beautiful women. He's looking at them, but it's as though he's not looking at them. A very beautiful expression on his face. It's as though he's looking at them, but he's looking beyond them. And the feeling is that he's completely unimpressed by the physical beauty. He doesn't care. You know, it's like he's totally beyond. So he didn't identify all this. He just saw the painting. He kept looking at it. He kept looking at the expression on the face of Christ. And then he broke down crying. And he cried and he cried and he cried uncontrollably, you know, from deep inside. Everybody's like looking at him. And he knows it's stupid, I shouldn't be crying, there it's a church, I should be silent, people are coming in, but he just couldn't stop himself. He kept crying and crying and crying and crying, and he said, okay, I have to get out. He tried stopping, but it got worse, and then he went out, there's a garden outside, he went and he sat on a bench, and he said, he kept continuing to cry, he doesn't know how long, half an hour, 45 minutes, and it was very painful. It was very, very painful, there was so much of sorrow within me. And I didn't understand where that all that sorrow came from. But that was, he said, sort of a life-changing experience for him. He couldn't understand, why did I start crying? I saw a painting. Why did I stop crying? I started crying. Then he went into the church again, he saw the painting, he couldn't understand. But that sort of stimulated his sort of spiritual life, you could say. Started searching for what happened to me. And you know, usually he's a very person fully in control, not just of himself, of all people, of all situations. And to lose control like that completely for so long was very disturbing for him. And then he started exploring, he started reading, he started getting into various spiritual groups, started meditating, trying to find out. And he said after a few months, slowly, he had felt something that day, but it started becoming clearer and clearer and clearer and clearer to him over time. And it became very clear to him later why he cried. Do you know why he cried? He felt the experience was, his life was a life of complete indulgence. Complete indulgence. Not just in terms of, you know, possessions and accomplishments and all those things, but in terms of, you know, food and women and everything, drinks, and complete indulgence. So, work hard, party harder. That was the motto of his life. Yeah? And when he saw that expression, he said it touched something very dear within him. And it was that repentance that came with the realization of, shit, what have I done to myself? What have I done to myself? Very deep realization. I've gone against my own inner self. I've gone against my original qualities of purity, of integrity, of love. And his life completely changed, slowly, of course, over a period of time. But it changed completely. So many a times we don't know because, it could be because of social factors, it could be because of whatever it is, but we are unable to get in touch sometimes with these values of the spirit. And so we don't even know that we are going against our own values and causing such a big damage and guilt to myself. But we keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. But at some point, the realization may come. But obviously, we cannot wait for going to a church and finding a painting which will stimulate that experience. But I would say, at least in my experience and the experience of many others, the process of meditation itself can enable this connection with our deep, deep inner values. My own inner experience with meditation is, you know, it's been now more than 16 years. There were some things that I understood intellectually 16 and a half years ago. Like, for example, the values of the soul, the value of love, the value of purity, the value of power and strength. I understood them intellectually 16 and a half years ago. That was simple to understand. But to actually experience that I have lost these values, and to experience what it means to feel these at the deepest, deepest core of my being, there are some things that I've experienced only in the last year. After 16 years of work, some things I experienced maybe a few years before. You know, that realization. Because it is that, and that realization sometimes can be very, very painful. Can be very, very painful. But that pain is okay, it's healing, because when we are in meditation, when we are in the company of God, we are protected. And whatever pain we feel, it's okay, it's a healing that will go. On our own, it is very difficult to look at that and handle and deal with that pain. Very, very difficult. If I'm on my own, then I want to seek support from human beings, and then I get trapped in attachments, and then many other problems can happen. But that realization, and then that is the feeling that we are speaking about. The way our mind works is, and how the soul, how our emotions work also is, every negative feeling has a positive side to it. So love is also associated with hurt. Because there are people we have loved, and we have not got back what we have expected, so there has been hurt. So if I repress the hurt, I'm also repressing the love. This is a fact of inner spirituality. I can't tell myself, oh, let's just forget about it. If I suppress, without having transformed it, if I push it away, I'm also pushing away the love. Next time, it is lesser strong, and therefore I'm unable to use it as much as I can. I get hurt again, I push away the hurt without having transformed it, without having healed it, I'm pushing away some more love. And I keep doing this over a long period of time, I've pushed away a lot. And therefore, I am unable to experience that hurt. I believe so. It's in my unconscious. But the love has also gone into the unconscious. I experience something else which I call love. So I can experience lust and call it love. And so therefore, awareness and awakening is a process. A, I need knowledge, very clear understanding of the spiritual rules, of the spiritual conditions. B, I need the practice of yoga to go into that deep stillness in the companionship of God and try and experience these core values and the eternal nature of the spirit. And C, I need to bring this out in action. So, knowledge, stillness, also action. So, how action? If someone has hurt me, one is, I try to ignore that hurt, push it away. Second, I go against that person, try to give it back to that person. Third, I try to avoid that person, stay away from that person, so I don't get to confront my own hurt. In all ways, I am going away. I am repressing my original nature and therefore creating more emptiness. Action would be, sit there, be in companionship of that person, continue to interact with that person, get in touch with my deep inner spiritual truth. Get in touch with God and tell Him, I want to transform this because I'm not in touch with my truth. I don't like this feeling of anger, this hatred within me. See the good in the other because there is also good in the other. There must be evil, there is also evil within me, so big deal. See the good in the other and transform that feeling. Transform that feeling of anger. Bring out forgiveness. Forgiveness then gets you self-respect. Because then you can feel inside, I have the power to forgive. And that gives you self-respect. This is action. Not to draw away from difficult situations, difficult people, difficult relationships. Not just to sit there and suffer also. But to actively work on transforming it. Because if you don't transform it, what usually happens, many of you may have experienced it, But, you know, in psychological clinics, we see this all the time. If I don't transform an experience of hurt and I move away from that relationship, usually what happens is it repeats. In the next relationship, I have a similar experience. Then I move away, it repeats. Then I move away, it repeats, because I've never transformed it. If I had worked on transforming it in the first place, there might never have been the need for me to move away. And I keep losing my self-respect more and more with time. So the awareness and the awakening leads to the feeling. And of course, this is what, when we speak about yoga, this is what we are looking at. So of course, we have spoken about these three aspects of yoga. One is awareness, understanding. The second is the experience of stillness and the companionship of God. And the third is bringing out the experience into action. Experiencing the hurt and the love together, because where there is hurt, there is love. And then emerging that love so much from within us, that the hurt disappears. Because love will heal the hurt. Not love from outside, no. The love from within me will heal the hurt, not from love from outside. The love from within me, and to emerge the love from within me, I need the love of God. Because His love is unselfish. It is selfless. And I need that experience of unconditional love. And there is only He who can give us that unconditional love, which will then help me in emerging my own love, healing the hurt, regaining my self-respect. And this self-respect is not the kind of egotistical self-respect that we sometimes feel. You know, the thrill. Feeling good. Yeah, I've done it. No, that is ego. That is a manifestation of the emptiness of the spirit. There's excitement. There's emptiness inside. But this self-respect is deeper, stable, nothing can shake it. It has humility in it. True self-respect has humility in it. It's a part of self-respect. There will not be any arrogance. And that is true. And therefore, we can. So, that self-respect is not unconditional because it is based on these conditions. But because it is based on these inner conditions, it becomes unconditional, because then it is not based on any of these conditions. So, in one way, it becomes unconditional. So, then I don't need any of this. Things happen, fine. They don't happen, it's okay. I can deal with that. But for that, I need to fulfill the inner conditions of my self-worth. I need to be in touch with my inner values. I need to be in touch with my eternal nature. Okay? Any questions? Yes. Agnes?
But if you want to love others or to give love to others, so you first of all, you have to love yourself. Isn't it right?
Precisely.
What can you recommend or suggest to people that they cannot or don't know how to love themselves? A friend of mine, or classmate I had, actually, you know, the opposite of the guy that you knew. He doesn't have all those values that you have written down. Doesn't love himself, he doesn't trust what he can do, and he's actually a very clever guy, but he just needs, to trust himself, to love himself, and he's like, he cannot like sit still, he has to do something, he has to go and meet people, and he cannot find his quietness, peaceness in himself.
Mm-hmm.
What can you like recommend to like, if I would tell him go and do the meditation, he would say, what is meditation? It's I don't have time for that, or
yeah.
It's not interesting for me.
We cannot obviously force anyone to do anything. There has to be an understanding. Without that, it cannot work. But as you've said, this person seems to be so much involved with trying to prove himself through activity. From what you were saying, it appears to be the case. And so obviously that means there are things lacking inside which the person is trying to compensate for. Yeah? So by the logic of spirituality, the person will need to sit down and try and experience that stillness, that self-worth, without doing any activity. For that, A, he needs understanding, first of all, of what he is creating for himself by indulging himself in those activities again and again. He needs that understanding first. And then the realization. And then, of course, you can look at whether the person is willing to take up any spiritual practice or not. But obviously, we can't force such things on people. People realize at their own times. You know, I started practicing meditation or practicing whatever kind of spirituality about 16, 16 and a half, 17 years ago. Why not 20 years ago? It started when it had to start. Something brought about a realization and I started it there. How can you facilitate that? Give him a lot of unconditional love. That's it. Just keep doing that. Talk to him when you can. Try to make him, question him. Try ask him, you know, all these things that you're doing. What do you hope to achieve? Question. Try to bring about that realization. Of course, if I sit and tell him, hey, you're doing this, you do this, and it will become okay for you. He may not always accept that. The realization has to come from within. But we can facilitate that. We can facilitate that, I would say, through our own example first. So if I have been successful in bringing about a transformation in my life, and I have been able to bring about a transformation in my own experience of self-worth, the chances are others will see it. And then they might be inspired to bring about a transformation in the same way themselves. Any other questions? Yes?
I'm wondering, is this a question of either or is it a question of more than less? Because
you mean either or?
Either
this, this way?
Means, yes.
Yeah, okay. Can I answer that? Yes. Okay. It is not a question of either or. In terms of, it is not a question of moving away from any of these things. How do we live? What do we do then in the world? So obviously, it's not a question of moving away from any of these things. It is not a question of not taking care of my body and not making myself look at least presentable. Yeah? So it's not a question of not accomplishing and achieving. It's not the question of not setting goals. It's not the question of not using my competencies. It's not a question of being virtuous in our actions and being kind and gentle. It's not a question of that at all. It's a question of not making that the foundation of my self-respect. So, in fact, I do all these things even better because I'm not dependent on them. Because I'm coming from a space deep within me, which gives me strength, which gives me power. And therefore, I'm able to do this even better without depending on them. And I may still experience problems, but because I'm working from a space within, I can deal with them better.
Well, what I mean is that either you feel this self-esteem or you don't. It sounds as if it's that is either or.
Oh, you mean to say that there could be like things in between also?
It's yes, but because when you work on transformation,
yeah,
it sounds as if little by little you change your situation.
Yes.
So it sounds as if it could be more or less self-esteem, and at the same time it sounds as if you may feel no self-esteem at all because you are sort of hung up in all
this. Okay, let me try and explain this. The reality is all of us do work from this level to some extent, and we also work from us mostly from this level. So there is a mixture of intentions. So when I want to help someone, it is not that it's only because I want to get approval or I'm trying to be moral and virtuous and trying to make myself happy. No. The soul is operating. And I want to help people because that is a value of the soul. But that somehow gets mixed with some of these things. And that creates the costs. So there is some element of self-esteem that comes because I am also working from this level. But because it gets mixed here, then I have the costs. So the process of transformation, as I understand it, is to remove this part of that intention and to hold on and to cultivate and to nourish and grow this deep inner motive. Does that answer your question? Yes, that is the process. So usually the intentions are mixed up.
And then maybe there's no identification, so I can feel as if I'm without self-esteem. It's a kind of
that can all, yeah, it is fundamentally identification. That's what makes me feel that. But then the reality also is that I do sometimes move away from my values. And because of that, I do commit things through which I experience guilt. So that part is also there. And if I don't acknowledge that and I just repress it, that's again not going to be healthy. So it is both. One is, of course, I can just imagine because of my identification. But the other is also that I do things which move me away. And I push my own nature away. It's like, you know, you put someone in a room and you beat them every day. And you punish them every day. And you take away all their freedom. Will that person grow up with any lot of self-respect? It's very difficult to imagine that, right? So there is this part of me, that purity and that love. And every time I give in to anger and selfishness and impurity, it's like I'm bashing up my own nature. And that creates a lot of suffering for the soul. And so that aspect also needs to be looked at and healed. But doing it on our own becomes very, very painful. And therefore in Raja Yoga we have this very clear practice of connecting with the higher power, making God our companion, our friend, and in that companionship, looking at the self. Then we have that safety and security. Some element of that. Yes?
You just answered my question. I was going to ask how the soul would regain its purity after having been subjected to stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I guess you just answered my question now by connecting with them.
Connecting with God, but also taking responsibility for my own transformation. Otherwise, you know, it's like praying to God, okay, heal me, heal me, heal me. But I also need to take up that responsibility to bring about the transformation. So, for example, I have lost whatever it is because of some experiences. It is also then my responsibility to transform those experiences, to forgive those people who I hold responsible for having caused me suffering, as we discussed in the last session. And that becomes critical for experiencing self-esteem. Yes?
Let's say I'm a driver of a car that happens to run over some
children
with their fingers out and maybe a couple of children die.
Understand.
Obviously, my soul would feel very guilty.
Yes.
How would I overcome that guilt?
Yeah, very good question. And a very difficult situation. And we would have many situations like that sometimes in our life, where unintentionally we do something that causes a lot of damage and harm to other people. So how do we bring about a transformation? Again, I would say the three aspects. A, understanding. I did not mean to cause that. First, accept that for the self. Understanding. The second is allowing the power of God to work in me through stillness. And third, constructive action. Trying to do what we can to the people who have been affected by that. So say some children have been, maybe they have died, but they're associated, there is a family, there are many things associated. Can I do something for them? I would feel too guilty to even go and face the parents. But I should do that. And take whatever comes my way. Take it. And keep doing what I can for them, as much as I can, for how long I can. So it's an action also. So understanding, stillness and action. We need to do all three, yes?
If we have to turn the situation around and say that I'm going to be the mother to two or three of the kids that have been killed, would I as a mother be able to
transform that
pain?
Transform that pain and that hurt?
Yeah, without blaming this person for taking away.
Okay, that was the subject of our last session on forgiveness, but it's a valid thing because now we are going again back to the experience of forgiveness. But it is essential that without forgiveness, of course, it's difficult to experience self-respect. But as we had discussed in the previous session, there are many things that we could look at. First is, again, understanding. Yeah, it is very, very painful. I have lost my children. It is extremely the most painful thing in the world. But then what do I do? Do I let it make me a victim? Who's going to benefit from that? And if I let that make me a victim, that is my choice. That is my choice. That is a reality. I can transform it. How can I transform it? Maybe work with other mothers who have lost their children. Like we gave the example of some people who've done that. When they've experienced something, they want to do something for others. who have experienced similar things, and in that process they are able to bring about the healing within themselves. So it's like whatever has affected me, trying to help others who have been affected by the same thing, and I'm creating a sense of meaning and purpose in my life, I'm helping others to overcome that, and in that process I will also have the power to overcome my own injury. So again, action. Understanding, stillness, action. Three aspects. Three subjects of Raja Yoga, we say knowledge, remembrance, and we say practice or dharma, action. There's the fourth subject, but we won't get into that right now. So these three fundamental things, understanding, stillness, and actual action. And we say, when we say action, we are speaking about holding on to the values of the soul, not letting go. I don't know if any of you know Hindi here. The Hindi word is dharana. And dharana means to hold. Dharan karna is to hold. So the meaning of action here is not action out there, though it can also be that. The action here is holding on to my values and my nature. Not letting go of my love, my optimism, my hope, my peace, my happiness, however difficult the situation would be. Finding ways of holding on to it. That is practice. For that we need power. For that we need stillness. And we need understanding. Okay? Oh, it's already 6:25. So, 5 minutes of meditation at least? Can we do that? So, within a second, I allow the body and the mind to settle down. Moving away from all the thoughts, all the sensations of this physical existence, I turn within. Go deep within myself. Go deep within to the center of my being, the soul, the spirit. A point of infinity. A point of eternity. And in this awareness of my eternal self, I experience this physical existence to completely disappear from my consciousness. Until all that is left is the sparkling star of the soul. And I see myself in the land beyond, the world of light. And I see myself once again in the presence of the Supreme. And I rest under the light of God. I see Him sparkling down upon me, a beautiful sparkling star. The point source of infinite love. Unconditional love. Unending purity. Infinite peace. and I rest in this healing embrace of light. In the healing presence of God. Experiencing the deep filling stillness of the spirit. Feeling the deep, silent power and love and peace of the Spirit, and holding on to the light of God, I let myself gently return back to this world of matter, back to take my place in the center of the brain, looking out through the windows of these eyes, listening through these ears, spreading the light of life, the light of peace throughout the brain and the body, in touch with my inner truth, with my inner purity, love and light. I am a being of light, a being of peace. Om Shanti.